All right, good night. Drive safe.
Yeah, later.
That's that show done.
In the tank.
Not in the tank. In the can.
When I said it, I was like, what's he going to say?
Oh, no. Hello and welcome to episode 478 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tubingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam Vancouver.
What's going on in... Oh my... It's like I never said that before.
What's going on in Vancouver, Adam?
What's going on in Vancouver, Adam? What? Let me do it with the radio voice.
Okay, go.
What's going on in Vancouver, Adam? I gotta change my name to Guy Smiley after that.
Yeah, with all that lead in, I have nothing. It's stuff. Stuff's
going.
You had
a holiday the other day. Family Day. Yeah. How was Family Day?
Was fantastic. That was we spoke in last episode about the hockey tournament. That was the hockey tournament.
That's what that was. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the one in Seattle.
Yeah. Linwood, Washington.
Okay, which is President's Day down there.
Yeah, they have a holiday as well. That's correct.
Okay, I see. All right, so fill us in on how did the whole equipment buying end?
Oh, I you know what? Because the hockey tournament and the schedule and whatnot occupied too much of my time, the final game was like on the afternoon of the holiday Monday. And so by the time the game was over, we were no longer going to make a stop at the sporting equipment store on the way home. So I just did not do it. And that was my choice. I was like, yeah, not happening. I want to go home. And therefore the purchases will be Amazon made. So maybe soon after we finish recording this, I will jump on there. I have this stuff saved in my car. Just gotta pull the trigger.
Did you check the website I sent you?
I did check the website and there are some phenomenal deals. Mostly what I thought would be a crazy deal were cleats, like new baseball cleats. There was stuff on there for like $4 for brand new cleats.
If you can find your size, which it's always odd sizes and sometimes odd colors.
Yeah.
However, what brand? This is not an ad. What brand does your son wear?
Last year he wore New Balance.
That's all I wear, man. I love those.
Yeah, and he loved them too. And I did not see the crazy cheap New Balance in his size. There was other ones. And then I thought, I don't want to buy him cleats without him like knowing, like at least, you know, Nike fit one way, New Balance fit one way. So it would be easier to do that. So I'll probably end up paying regular price at Sport Check.
Okay, here's your move. September, write this down. September and middle end of September, go back on there.
Okay.
Buy them for the next season. That's when you find the $4 cleats. Like I legit paid for my first pair of New Balance. I did the exact same move. This is years ago, but bought them for about $6. And they're all great color, perfect size, but it was the end of the season. So you go ahead and take a gamble. What I would do if I was you is just buy like four pairs at $4 each.
It's worth it.
And then, give them away to other people on the team or whatever it is. That's your move. Because spikes in Vancouver are expensive, I find.
Yeah. And for kids, well, now he's men's sizes. So, yeah, you're right. They are expensive.
Usually, like a lot of them are like $130 or something like
that. Yeah. And I'll find them something for sub 100, but they're going to be at least $80.
And they don't last. Here's the thing is those do not last, even for like an adult. I mean, obviously, he grows out of them, but... But when you're an adult like myself, who does not grow anymore, they break down. You get a couple seasons out of them, but when that happens, it's just sad. It's just a sad thing because you got to get new ones. But anyways, I digress.
Yeah.
Well, let us know how that goes.
Buy your stuff on Amazon. That's all we're saying.
That's buy it on Amazon. Click through our site. And you'll help us out.
Sure.
All right. What's going on, Adam?
It's nice weather, like it's, you know, spring is in the air.
Yeah.
We've had a pretty week solid of sunshine and really, you know, it's cold in the morning because it's clear, but by midday, we're getting like, you know, 11, 12 degrees and really starting to feel. I'm getting excited because this is, you know, baseball is going to get rolling here real quick for us. We're going to be outside at the park a lot more. So I'm, you know, I talked about hockey and the streak and all that, but I am really looking forward to the end of hockey and the beginning of baseball.
As am I. Not so much the beginning of baseball, really. I mean, I am for my son, but it's such a massive time suck for me that I've dialed it back a lot. So maybe I'm looking forward to it. We'll see.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to my grass growing.
Sure.
Because my son has been beating the crap out of it playing soccer in the front yard.
Yeah.
Which I'm happy for him to do. If it grows back, it grows back. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I'll plant it again. That's what boys do. So I'm happy about that. But
super sexist. That's super sexist.
No, it's more ageist than anything. I was like young boys. My daughter.
No, you're sexist.
In my... Does that mean the same thing as sexy? Because yes, the answer is yes. Well, once again, we'll ask your wife. We'll see what she says.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, you got it in.
Hashtag.
Two for two.
Hashtag. That's for you, kiddo. So, I say that because my daughter could care less about soccer.
Right.
So I don't know if that's a girl thing.
Half of the athletes I treat, as far as being a physiotherapist are, soccer players, female soccer players.
Right. Okay.
Very common.
Oh, for proud we are. Like,
females to play soccer.
Yeah. All of a sudden I'm Mike Bloomberg over here. I'm the guy. And you're Elizabeth Warren just beating me up.
Yeah. So thanks. Just letting you know that, you know, girls also play soccer.
My point was, it wasn't the soccer part. It was the part of ripping up the front grass.
Right.
Historically speaking, that's a little boy's move, not a little girl's move.
Again, I'm gonna
at my house.
I'm gonna take issue with that. Yeah.
I don't care what you don't have a front lawn. You have a back lawn.
No, so, we have a tiny front lawn. I could dribble a ball back and forth between my legs.
Okay. Well, next time I'm there, I'm gonna do a lawn burn on your front lawn.
Okay.
You shouldn't know what that even is.
Yeah, I know what it is.
I know you know. You shouldn't know is what I'm saying. Anyways, point being, my son is out there kicking the grass. Let me rephrase that. That's what kids do. Kids go out there and play in the grass.
Sure.
And that's
there fine. You fine go. Was that so hard?
Well, that's what I was. Yeah, evidently. So that's what I was getting at. We're gonna nitpick. That's what I forgot how woke you are. That's the thing.
I am.
You're all woke over here.
Hashtag. Adam's woke.
The two wokers, hoser, no. Two wokers.
Just woke up, Adam.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Got it.
Okay.
That should be a thing. We should, I back in the day, 20 years ago, probably, I don't know if this hair, look who I'm asking hair product, but it's a hair product, was called Bedhead.
Yeah, I heard of it.
You've heard of it, yeah. You heard other people wearing it.
Yeah.
But, it was a thing, like, and so it came. It was like a glue stick, like a YooHoo glue stick, but it was like hair wax, and you kind of the whole thing was to make your hair look like you spend like an hour making your hair look like you just woke up.
Perfect.
Right? So it was called Bedhead.
That's weird.
I don't know where that was going with that with the tie.
Yeah, great tangent. Glad we had that.
Good job, Bedhead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Should have made more notes. You should have made more notes this week.
No, I didn't make any notes. I'm looking forward to spring as well. I mean, it's staying lighter out later, which is nice.
That's how it works.
I understand. I'm like, thank you, Copernicus.
Yeah.
Slow down so I can take some notes, okay?
Okay.
Hey, how about this? While we're on that subject, maybe you can help me out. Explain to me why, because this is a leap year. This is airing just after leap day there. Is it called Leap Day?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't even know if that's true, but...
No, it's not.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Sure it's called Leap Day. Whatever, Feb 29.
Point really, it's a good title for a movie.
Why is there a Leap Day? My kid, my daughter asked, and I explained it, and then thought, I don't think I'm right.
I have no clue. So you're definitely barking up the wrong tree here.
Okay, so I'm going to do the work it out in real time right now. You know who should have asked? I should have asked our guest today, who is coming up later, Don Komarecki, because I'm sure He knows all about it.
Yeah, he would know that.
Yeah.
Because instead of attending his high school prom, he was researching stuff like that.
That is a much nicer joke than I had. I was really, I had that holstered and I was like, ah, let it go. Well done. Well done. He's listening too.
Yeah, for sure he is.
No, the point is, you know, we know that the earth goes around the sun and I mean the flat earth goes around the sun. It takes 365 days, but it doesn't. It's not exactly right. No, I always thought it
364 and a quarter.
That's what I always thought. And then after 4 years, you have to reset and go back. And so it adds an extra day, but that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I'm not sure that. I mean, it kind of makes sense.
No. I think it must be 300 and... no, wait. How does that work? 364 and three quarters days.
Right.
Yeah. And then every 4 years, it's behind 1 day. So you have to add a day to get it back to that starting point.
Yeah, that works.
That makes more sense, right?
Yep.
This feels like something I should know.
But why?
That's true. I can't really affect it.
Yeah.
point being, I'm excited about spring coming as well. I like the smells, the what have you. It's just exciting. So you're right. You're 100% right.
Yes.
Still going to rip up your lawn, though.
Okay.
All right. Reminder, monthly challenge, we'll talk about it next week, for February, is portrait, and that should be a portrait of a non-family member. Hashtag okay. That Two Hosers Monthly Challenge. Hashtag Hey Hosers on the Instagram. Be sure to tag us at Two Hosers, and we'll talk about that next week. We'll compare you to the benchmark that is Frank Pang.
Yes.
So there you go. All right. Did you shoot anything interesting since we spoke 40 minutes ago?
No. No, I haven't. How about you?
I say 40. It's probably been closer to 11.
Yeah, it's really recent.
No, I have not shot anything interesting.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Moving on, photo show.
That should speed things up. Photo challenge, RFN. I wrote it down as today, but RFN. You said, hey, I'm super busy. Can we just phone it in this week? And I said, yeah. It's funny because prior to recording this, we were called out on Instagram.
Okay.
For having lame weekly challenges.
Okay. I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
I would love if someone would just provide a comprehensive list
that
was super interesting for us that we haven't done.
Well, I don't know. I didn't read them all. I was busy as we talked about. But, Now this is the kind of, first of all, fun fact, Adam and I both have very thick skin when it comes to this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And by thick skin, we literally just don't care. But
yeah, that's the definitely more my speed. Yeah,
yeah, it's thick skin or apathy. I'm not sure. No. When it comes to this, it definitely thick skin. However, the kind of criticism that we like the best is this kind of constructive criticism.
Okay, so suggestions. Well,
I haven't read them all yet, but like I said, I'm still apathy. But the so Pixelscaper basically said, hey. I'll give them the short version. Your weekly challenges suck. And
okay, all right.
So here's some interesting ones. Yeah. You can still shoot your kids playing hockey and baseball.
Sure. So yeah. That's what we do.
That's what we do. Yeah. And so we can do that. But and then he made a list. Like he took a photo of a list of a whole bunch of potential ones.
Okay.
And they all suck.
Okay. Awesome. No.
I haven't read them all yet, but I was like, wow, so if you're going to complain about something, which he is, at least take the time to offer a solution, which he does. Yes. So
yeah,
well
okay.
done.
Here's the thing though, when it comes to photo challenges and 470 episodes is that
you have stuff to do.
Well, it's stuff to do, but also we've done it. We've done it and we've done it and we've done it and we've done it. And we've done it again. And I've looked on just for even ideas, just photo challenge lists, suggestions. We've done them. It's very hard to find one we haven't done. And then, so how many times do we do a photo challenge? So I'm interested. I'm not going to look at his list, but I'm interested to know if there's anything on that list that we've yet to cover in the vast number of photo challenges we've already done.
Well, challenge number one he wrote is something good. So we haven't done that yet.
Yeah. No, we've actually tried that, but we didn't succeed. Yeah.
No. That's hard to do. It's funny because in the interview coming up shortly, I talked to Don Komarechka about breaking new ground and you know how everything's under the sun has already been done and you know how, like, but yet he continues to break new ground. So hashtag he's better than us.
Yeah. I think that's true. Yeah.
So this week was crazy. You're listening to this. I'm actually back from skiing, but my family's skiing. I'm snowboarding, and we went on a week long ski vacation in a place called the Allgäu, which is like the sort of like the mountains right at the edge of the Alps. And hopefully we have snow. Global warming not that great, but and hopefully I didn't break my leg.
Yeah, but that would be bad.
Fun fact, this will be, or has been, at this point has been, but will be the first time I've ever skied or snowboarded, or skied, but snowboarded with a helmet. I got a helmet.
Wow.
That means I'm going to get wildly reckless.
Yeah, you are not a helmet guy.
I'm not a helmet guy. I am like Craig McTavish if he snowboarded.
Yeah.
Rod Langway of the Allgäu.
Right.
Not a fan. Not a fan of that at all. In fact, there's a semi decent chance I'll play in a men's league hockey tournament in September here in Germany, in Munich. We're still working on the details, and I think you probably have to wear a helmet. But I'm gonna try to wear my Jofa.
Oh, you should wear your snowboarding helmet. That would be awesome.
Yeah. And Velcro skates.
You should see if you can get on Amazon one of those old like 1930s like football. No, the ones they used to wear playing football. Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah, the leather helmet. That like would be fantastic.
Like the old fighter pilot helmets. Yeah. Oh no, wait. I think it was the fighter pilot started wearing those helmets. Like the fighter pilot started wearing football helmets. I forget how that went. I gotta watch The Right Stuff again. That's sure. What I do. Got to read that book. Read that book, Jaeger, again. That was a good read. All right. So photo challenge this week is RFN. We had zero time, so Adam said, hey, the challenge is what can we shoot right now? And I did. Let's have a look at yours first. We did mine first last week. Okay. Yeah,
mine was on the way to the car this morning, taking my kids to school. And
your kids walk to school?
They do, except for I don't work Friday. I work a condensed week. That's probably come up somewhere in the years past on the podcast, but I work a Monday to Thursday work week. And so Fridays, you know, I make pancakes. We have our routine. Like I make pancakes for them every Friday morning. Like that's our tradition. Mm-hmm. And I give them a ride to school because I'm home and I feel like, yeah, I give them a ride to school. It's not like the school is right behind our house, but it's also not, it's probably about a 15-minute walk. And so right. It's a treat. I don't mind doing it. Anyways, walk outside and I'm like, oh, the sun's out. It's clear sky day. And I asked my daughter, who again is an enormous recent fan of the podcast. And so she's very cooperative, easy to get her to participate for a photo. So I said, okay, I need you right now. And where the sun was hitting, I said, stand over here, click X100, the end. There you go.
Are you? Tell me how glad you are you bought that camera.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good.
I wish, in my email correspondence with the photographer from the concert last week, he said, like, we actually didn't meet at the concert. And I said, oh, yeah, I looked for you. You're gone. He's like, oh, man, I actually said I wanted to come talk to you. And I just couldn't. It was busy, whatever, you know, ships in the night kind of thing. And he said, yeah, I saw you had X100. I was like, I have that camera too, and I love it. So we kind of semi sort of email bonded over that. And my response to him was, yeah, I wish it was my only camera. I wish it could be my only camera. Yeah. Love it that much. And so in this case, I didn't shoot mine with it, but great camera, especially in this situation. What I like about this is you've clearly used the sun as a key light, but then also as a bounce off the building, which then is a nice soft light filling in that side. Yeah, nice shadow from the sun, but yet we still see that. The fill side of the face is like, it's a really great balance. And this looks, although I do know you, so I know you put zero effort into this, or slightly more than zero, but it's
very
looks like
close to zero. Yeah.
How, you know, we joke about that. Like, you picked this spot for a reason. It wasn't like she tripped and fell and landed against this wall and you snapped a photo and moved on. You did choose this for a reason, and the very fact that you were able to choose it in under 12 seconds is a testament to how many photos you've taken and how much you've learned, etc., or learned or developed or you know, honed your own craft, is a testament to that. So this while this does seem simple, this is years in the making to make it this simple.
Yeah, number one is I guess recognize where the good light is, right? So that's part of it, and then recognize which angle is going to utilize that light the best. So, you know, I saw when I walked outside, I saw, you know, light hitting one of the houses, the fence, and just the way it was kind of like half on the fence, half off, the way it dropped to dark, and then I thought, okay, this will be easy. Stand over here. I'll get the background. I'll get a little bit of depth, but I'll also get the cool light hitting the fence. It sort of serves as a background. And then, like you said, the bounce off the white. So rather than moving her back 10 feet, shooting her right against the fence, I wanted to use the bounce. So you're right. There's little things. But again, I think it's all in the repetition and the trial and error to kind of figure those things out. And then she wanted to, of course, because it's too bright, she's like, can we turn around the other way? And I said, absolutely not. We're going to get the most horrific looking shadows and blown out background and blah, blah, blah. So I said, just close your eyes. This is the move that every photographer who listens to our show probably knows, but just in case you don't, close your eyes and then 1, 2, 3, open and take that photo.
And plus, I just wanted to give a shout out to Gregor Mendel and you know, his work with dominant and recessive genes. So I'm just glad her the dominant genes came through on this one, and your recessive ones are just going to die off.
Yeah. She's a good looking kid, and so is my son. So that's fortunate for them because
good work on the adoption.
No, I credit my wife. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. No, I understand. Like I said, dominant genes.
Yeah. Although I like to take credit for their athleticism.
Yes. No, that makes complete sense. Yeah. You were a fantastic dancer. I know that.
Yes. You could transfer pure athleticism to whatever you want.
I was at your wedding, man. You know how to cut a rug.
Oh, sure do.
So, all right. So when you issued this challenge, I immediately ran outside and took a shot of my son playing soccer, the aforementioned soccer, him tearing up the front grass. Actually, he put this kind of warmed my heart. This is why I actually like this photo more than just a snapshot, although that's what it is. They had taken his big soccer net and put it out in the street. So they were playing like road hockey, but soccer. So even though I'm not a huge soccer fan, the very fact that he was playing it out in the street kind of Canadianized it to me.
Sure.
So here he was with his buddy, and they're out there playing some soccer. I said, hey, come just pose for a photo. Which we did with the 5D Mark III, 24-105, racked out to 105 at an F4, and blammo.
Okay, so I have one thought about this photo from a critical standpoint.
Okay.
It seems very gray. Like you've kind of taken all the contrast out or put a filter in it that's kind of like, in some ways, kind of flattened it all out, if that's the right term. Yeah, and you did that intentionally.
I did that just to make this a conversation piece.
Okay, it looks more old-timey. That's what it makes me think.
It does look more old-timey. Which, now, I added the white and the black frame around it. That's something I added in Photoshop later. But the actual, I did not process this image outside of clicking on a preset that I had installed. Now, Lightroom comes with a bunch of presets that you probably never use.
No.
There's a number of them, but you can also get a bunch of third-party ones and install them. And so I have a bunch of them, like VSCO, I think was the name of them. I think they got bought by Google. And then there's some Kodak ones, and I believe this was the Kodak one. This was like a tri-X with like a minus one, maybe it was a one-stop pulled, but it has everything baked into it, meaning it sets all the settings for you, all the sliders and everything. It just, boom, it sets it and converts it to black and white and adds that little grain. And so there's a whole bunch you can choose from, and I never use them. But I decided, you know what, I'm just going to do this just for a conversation in case we had nothing to talk about, which turns out we don't, but here we are. And just use that. Now, right away, I didn't like it. I kind of think it's pretty cool at this point. I'm not sure if I like it, if I love it, but, you know, I might use them every now and then.
Okay. Yeah, my simulation. First take was, this is weird, yeah. Mm.
It is different. But I'm going to encourage you to try a couple of the presets out now and then and just let them grow on you and see what you think.
Okay.
All right. Topic. I spoke with our friend of the show, Don Komarechka, who's got a book coming out. You know him, the Snowflake, another book. The guy, it's the second book he's written.
Snowflakes Part 2.
Snowflake, yeah. Ooh, Snowflakier.
Yeah.
I would see that. I wasn't super happy that he wrote a second book because he's now written more books than I've read. And so that stings a little bit.
Yeah.
No, come on. But Steve, in all fairness, Stephen King's written more books than you've read.
Yeah, for sure.
Not your wife. Your wife's a reader, but
yeah,
seriously.
For more than me, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no question. But anyway, so he's got another book coming out about macro photography. He sent me half the book as a PDF to kind of check out, which I did, and it is in depth and it's pretty amazing, comprehensive on the subject. But he talks all about it, and without further ado, here's my interview with Don Komarechka. Already better than Adam. He messes the countdown up like 50% of the time.
Well, then he gets it right half the time too.
Yeah, that's true. Broken clocks, right? 50%. I don't know how that phrase goes. Something like that. It's yeah. That. So, Don, what's going on? We already gave you the intro, of course.
Yes, Alan. Thank you so much for having me back on. This is.
Do you remember me?
You know, I think the last time we talked was like May of last year.
Yeah, but Skype tells me it was May of 2019.
So, you are a vague, distant memory.
Wow.
Time flies, man. You know, there's just so many projects that have been on the go. And, you know, I'm sitting here at my desk with like 50 windows open from tons of different projects. Just recorded an episode of my podcast, Photo Geek Weekly, with excellent human being and photographer Shiv Verma. And so I'm going to be editing that after our conversation. And, continuing to work on a great many things, some documentary film projects, and the biggest project of all is my upcoming book on macro photography.
And that last time we spoke, we talked about the genesis of that project, and you were just crowdfunding it, or just completed crowdfunding, perhaps. And so it's been a while. It's been a little over half a year. What's the update? What's the status on that book?
So crowdfunding was in the summer, and that was hugely important to the success of the project, and it vastly exceeded my expectations, which can be somewhat problematic because when you have that much to work with, you want to deliver the best you absolutely possibly can. And so I had originally aimed to have the book out in December. And that was based on the logic for when I produced my first book, Sky Crystals, that I could work with it in that timeline. Well, one topic of snowflakes does not equal the myriad of very in-depth conversations required on the entire genre in general. And so I have been working very diligently to put together the content in a way that's easy to understand, laid out in a way that can be read linearly or not, so that you're not missing anything along the way. And I'm aiming for an end of March, early April release, depending on when I can get on the press. But I sent you before this conversation some sample pages, almost actually about a half the book. I bundled
that was
up
only half.
That, yeah, that's only about half of it.
Oh man, I think that I don't think I've read a book as long as you've written.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment. And there's a lot of words in there. I didn't mean for you to read it all, but to get a sense of the kind of content that is being generated for it.
So to go back, so you said you exceeded your expectations on crowdfunding. What does that mean? What were your expectations?
I was hoping to get at least, you know, $30,000 to $40,000, and that would cover press costs, and I'd probably have to add in a little bit extra there, and I wouldn't mind because it would make be a good investment. I ended up through Kickstarter alone at $182,000 Canadian.
Wow! Right to Vegas then with that.
That's what I know. Keep in mind that about 10% of that I never see because that gets absorbed into Kickstarter's fees and payment processing fees, etc. And some of those numbers don't actually get charged properly and they get dropped. Scrape that off. 30% of the entire total is just logistics fees, which I'm holding on to now, but they have to be released when I have to ship the books. That's just the cost of moving them around the world. And the remainder is mostly going towards the press so that I could produce more copies of the book at a higher quality, the best possible paper quality than that's available on the market for this. So I make my real money from the project for the additional copies of books that I order. And that's, you know, the break-even point is in the dust behind me.
Nice. Well, that's great to hear. Now, one of the knocks, and I think I'll play devil's advocate here. One of the knocks on crowdfunding is, why should other people pay for your stuff?
Well, why should they buy a book from me in general? I mean,
exactly. We're looking at. I think when you consider crowdfunding in this situation as pre-sales. Which is what it is, correct?
Once you get past that initial threshold of actually being able to go to press, right. Because it might be hard for somebody to say, you know what, I'm going to fork out $45,000 to produce a book that maybe nobody buys. Right. Yes. I mean, there's a huge risk involved in doing that. And you might not have those funds available, or the bank might look at you with, raising an eyebrow and said, no, we're not going to give you that money for this. It's unlikely it will return to us.
And it's difficult to get an advance if you're not an established author.
This is true. So when you're doing the crowdfunding process, regardless of it being a book, you have to play into the advantages of the people that are going to be supporting the project. What are they going to get out of it? I don't think that this project would have been a success nearly as much so as it has been if this was just a fancy coffee table picture book. I mean, that might be a success, but not to the level that it is. And you've looked through the pages. Yes, there are big, beautiful images to look at. But there's almost as much text, in some cases even more, depending on how it's laid out, that describes everything about how it's being created. And yes, the nice, big, beautiful images on page spreads at the end of that, and then more content into how these things are being made. People bought this book because they wanted to know how to do it, not because they just wanted to look at pretty pictures. My mom would buy a copy of just my own pretty pictures, right? But... you know, there's a limited market for that. Call people selfish, but whenever I pitch into a Kickstarter campaign, it's always because whatever it is that I'm buying makes me, at least in my own delusions of grandeur, a better photographer, a better, you know, person for whatever device it happens to be. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of play to those sensibilities.
Yeah, to be clear, I am 100% pro in the favor of the crowdfunding. I just know it gets a bad rap, especially in the independent film realm, where people think, well, why don't you just make it yourself, and why do I have to invest in your movie? And like it doesn't really work like that. I mean, in this situation, like, you're offering an excellent product at a very, I would say, very low rate, considering, you know, what it could cost. So you're inviting people to come in at the beginning. And
yeah, the retail price is going to be $75 Canadian. You know, the Kickstarter was $48. Right. You can still pre-order it now at skycrystals.ca, by the way, at, I think, $62.99. So it's less than what the retail price will be, and they'll be shipping out in the order of which the orders are received. But even then, if the book was $100, I like to think within my own fantasy that it would be worthwhile.
I you're right. I didn't read the entire thing that you sent. How could I today? But it looks fantastic, and I did skim through it and see exactly what's going on. A lot of the images that look great, and that does make a nice coffee table book. But it's some, like, a lot of the images I do recognize as things that you've created, I've seen in the past. Not that you're repeating, but it's obviously you're building on what you shot, and you said explaining how you did it. But to go back to the beginning, like I skimmed through the different sections, and it looks like you cover pretty much everything from the basics of what is macro photography to the gear, to the technical, to the technique. So for the uninitiated who don't even know they want a book on macro photography, tell us a little bit about what is macro photography?
Well, the technical definition would be one-to-one life size. That's where the word macro comes from. But we use it more universally to be close-up photography. Anything close to that and well beyond that that moniker. And to describe that original macro marker, it would be as if you were to take a film camera with a macro lens on it and set it to its closest magnification, which was traditionally one-to-one, and photograph a quarter or any small coin. And then take that frame of film and then once you develop it and everything, and then hold that up to the quarter, and they would fit perfectly. It's the same size in reality as it was on your film plane or your sensor. Okay. But we're just thinking the up close world, the tiny stuff that usually we can't see with our own eyes, or we can see with more detail with our cameras. This could be anything from beautiful flower photography, snowflakes, freezing soap bubbles. The last two weren't in the pages that I sent you. Those are in additional stuff that's in the second half of the book. But that's the kind of content where if you want to use a water droplet, like a miniature crystal ball, and construct a whole set around that, how do you do it? Right? Mm-hmm. How do you be an artist and a photographer at the same time? And you know, some people might call that stuff out as being fake and disingenuous. Well, no, you're never going to come across that sort of scenario in nature. You are creating artwork as a photographer. And that artwork itself on a macro scale is really easy to have your hand in to manipulate things. Again, not in a disingenuous way, but like you're making a tiny sculpture that then once it's created is worthy of your photographic efforts.
So for the uninitiated, so someone who's, you know, like your regular dad photographer, like a lot of our listeners are, how will they be able to find out where to start?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the book starts going through lens options and how you can even modify your existing gear for not a whole lot of money. Mm-hmm. And how you can take your existing lenses and get as close as possible. The closer you get, the more challenging things become. Your depth of field becomes shallower and so on and so forth. But it also goes through every single topic, every single subject that I think is worthy of your photographic efforts. In fact, right now, as we're recording this, my camera is shooting a time-lapse video in my studio of citric acid crystals growing on a microscope slide. And with cross-polarized light, they create these vibrant, crazy, almost psychedelic colors. And that's actually what's going to be the image of this episode as the cover photo for it.
Check that out, definitely. Yeah, we don't need a book for that. That's all basic stuff. No, what's the really advanced stuff?
Hey, yeah. You know what? Some of the craziest stuff that I've done is using like a 50 times microscope objective to photograph a micrometeorite that measures a tenth of a millimeter in diameter. It is literally from outer space.
Okay. So, how does one find that?
Well, I didn't find it. I had one sent to me. Okay. But a colleague of mine who does find them finds them on the roofs of shopping malls, specifically ones with flat roofs that are made of vinyl. And if you go into sort of the gutters where things drain out and there's all this kind of silt and dust and what have you there, micrometeorites are often magnetic. And if you use an incredibly powerful magnet to kind of sift through and get some of the more magnetized stuff there and then look at it through a microscope once you've sifted through it a little bit, you might be able to find some micrometeorites that within a certain size, a meteorite won't completely break up into the atmosphere, and it won't completely dissolve. The typical tiny little, they're grains of sand to our eyes, would be between a tenth and maybe a third of a millimeter across. And so tiny little subjects that I think his first experience finding them was in the gutters of his own house. So, There you go.
And you are now photographing those.
Yes, yes. Oh, he sent me about a half a dozen or so. And so I've got those here, and they'll be making their way into the book. But it just illustrates that on the most extreme, tiniest scales, there's always more detail to explore.
Okay, so but how did you start? I mean, okay, to back up, we've actually gone over this probably before. So I would say Google the two hosers, Don Komarechka, and listen to previous episodes. They're all available. You can listen back for free. So without going into too much detail, how fast was your progression from basically, what was your first experience with macro, and how fast did you progress up to something advanced like this?
So my first experience was buying the Canon 100mm f2.8 macro lens, not the new fancy image stabilized version that they have now, but the more basic one.
See, mine was flipping a lens around backwards on your advice.
Well, I'm glad you took that advice, because that costs you almost nothing to do. Mm-hmm. But I was unfortunately of a mindset that I thought I needed a lens to do the work. I hadn't learned beyond that at this early stage. So I bought the lens, and I was really frustrated with it. You know, my images were dull. They were blurry, either because I couldn't get the focus right, or there was motion blur because I was using an aperture too small. And for the first year with that lens, I didn't use it a whole lot, because every time I picked it up, I didn't get anything worthwhile, or it was very difficult to. That changed quite dramatically when I bought a ring flash. And so a ring flash, for those that don't know, you know, attaches to the hot shoe on your camera, but it has a spiraled cord, and that cord will go to the end of your lens. And the flash is a ring that's literally attached to the front of your lens. And that was a game changer, because now I didn't have to worry about motion blur. Motion blur didn't exist anymore. And I like to use the fictional scenario. If you were in a completely dark room, like there's not a stray photon of light, and you set your camera to a 10-minute exposure, well, the image is going to be black, aside from whatever noise was in the sensor readout. But if during that time you arbitrarily pop a flash, what is the duration of that exposure, Alan? Is it 10 minutes, or is it the duration of the flash?
Is the flash pulse.
Exactly. And that can be as fast as 1/20,000th of a second, especially if your flash is right on top of your subject, which it is with a ring flash.
Right.
So if I'm shooting with an exposure of 1/200th of a second, but there's almost no ambient light coming in that scenario, then I have the ability to say to myself, okay, well, if I take a picture without the flash on at 1/200th of a second, and I'm not seeing anything, or I'm seeing very dim details, I know that all of the light when I turn the flash on is coming from the flash, and my exposure might be 1/20,000th of a second, and no motion blur will ever be in the image at that point. And so that was teaching me all about the dynamics of exposure and lighting, and it was a lot of fun to learn now that I was able to start getting successes. The real bug that bit me, though, was when I discovered snowflake photography. And that required a higher magnification lens, but down the rabbit hole I went using the same techniques.
And you're still doing that today?
I am, yeah. My yearly series of photographing and posting snowflakes you can find on all of my various social media accounts. There's always more to discover. Even I've started numbering my snowflakes based on, instead of, I would reset to like be number one every December 1st. I just went back to the total number and saw how many I had done. And I'm at 883 completed images, and I still haven't tired of it.
Wow. So you do 100 per season. Is that correct?
I used to. And then I would do like one a day to December 25th, to Christmas. And mm-hmm. then I would do one every other day until mid-March at some point, and then I end up with about 70 images.
Gotcha.
This year I'm kind of phoning it in a bit. I'm slacking, because the time that I was normally dedicating to that, I'm dedicating to finishing my book. So sorry about that.
That seems reasonable. So now we start with the gear, like you said, like you told me, flip the lens around, and then you can get into some really basic macro extension tubes, which I'm guessing you talk about in the book.
Oh, yeah. Well, extension tubes, basically, if you've ever seen an old-timey camera that has bellows on it, what's happening with that is the bigger the distance that you put between the lens and the film plane on those cameras, the closer focusing the front of the lens is. If you were shooting with a landscape image, those bellows would be fully contracted. They'd be very, very small, and the lens would be right next to the film plane. The focus point would be very far away. And if you wanted to focus closer, you would increase the distance between the lens and the film plane. Now, most lenses, even if it's not a macro lens, will have a focus to infinity on one side and whatever the minimum focusing distance is on the other. So what you can do is add extension tubes, which physically, they sit in between the lens and the camera body, and they shift the lens further away from the sensor, much like those bellows used to do. What that means is you won't be able to focus to infinity anymore. The infinity might be 5 feet away, but your closest focusing point will be much closer, and the optics will still work if you're just into that macro photography realm.
So you can get involved. So again, pick up the book, and you can get hands-on explanation about how to get into this and how to get bitten by the bug like Don did. But what I really like is that you do not hesitate to dive into all the technical explanations. I mean, a lot of what used to happen, I think podcasts 10 years ago probably changed the ball game. Actually, you know who changed the game? Let's give him credit.
Chris Marquardt.
He was definitely one of them. I think right around the same time, or maybe just before, Mr. Hobby.
David Hobby.
Mr. Strobist changed everything because he basically gave it away.
I learned a lot from David Hobby in the early days, especially when I was starting to learn flash. When I was starting to learn technical concepts about diffraction and depth of field, I learned that from Chris Marquardt. Mm-hmm. And you know, these people, I think they changed the way we looked at knowledge because they weren't afraid to give everything away. Like a lot of times people would hide like one secret ingredient in the recipe and and then you couldn't figure it out because that one piece of the puzzle was missing. And I took that and I kind of ran with it as well, because I realized, and I hope other photographers do this too, that you can be good at what you do, but you are standing on the shoulders of giants. A lot of the fundamentals that you're using for your craft, they're known by other people. And if you find something that gives you some sort of exclusive value to your work, if you hide that, somebody else is going to find it. That's not a question. Right. It's going to be discovered by somebody else. And if you are then holding that secret back and somebody else is giving it away freely, not only are you going to look bad, but your work is going to be somewhat disrespected for it. I have no problem if somebody uses the exact same techniques as I do.
Yes.
Partly because every image is going to be unique. And a photograph is not just a photo. It's also the brand of the photographer behind it. But moreover than that, if I've already showed you how to create that and you use those skills to build up and get something similar to yourself, by the time that you do, I'm a few steps ahead. Right, I've moved on, or I've done something differently, or I've enhanced, and I continue that story. But everybody's walking their own journey. There's no reason why you shouldn't fully detail the exact journey that you're on to help others.
And ironically, you end up helping yourself so much. Like I have learned, the entire impetus of our show, the whole origin was, I wanted to, first of all, Adam and I wanted to show where the rubber meets the road, and not, you know, have any secret tricks and oh no, it's to demythologize the entire process of photography, because I saw so much of that going on about, oh, well, no, you can't do that. Even when I went to film school, there was that little bit of, oh, well, we can't really tell you everything because it's, you know, it's behind the curtain. I said, no, we're not doing that. We'll tell you everything I possibly have ever learned. I will spit out here. I will share all of it, because guess what? I learn also from Chris Marquardt or guys like yourself or David Hobby. And by me sharing and putting things together, I have gotten so much better because of that. And so, like, I'm grateful for this opportunity, but I'm grateful to get to talk to people from all kinds of walks of photography and life in general. And that's what I'm seeing in this book, is that you're not scared to tell everybody, here's how I did this.
But also, Alan, and this is very important, I show you what mistakes I made along the way.
Right.
And okay. That I think a lot of people will maybe even glance over and not really fully appreciate. But it's one thing to look at a final polished image and understand how you got there. But how you got there is also the mistakes that you made along the way and how you found solutions to those problems. And if that's not transparent, and if people make mistakes the first time they attempt it and they think that they're doing something wrong, they are not doing something wrong. They are just taking those necessary stepping stones towards the success the same way that I did.
That's funny you should say that, because I bet you look at some of your photos or compositions or whatever they are, if they're multiple photos put together or designs, and like I see some of the stuff I've done and think, why did that take me 3 days? If I did that right now, I could do it in 6 minutes. But I'd be copying what I did in the three days.
But you also, you know what the end result is, and you learned through those 3 days what the process was to get there through all of the mistakes. And oftentimes when you make a mistake photographically in any genre, that is your learning point right there. If you don't use that as a learning point, then you're just giving up. Then that is a failure. A mistake is not a failure if you learn from it. On the other side of things, if you get it right perfectly the first time, you've learned nothing from the process.
That's true. You're gonna fail it badly next time. And then, I've had a situation like that, and many situations where I've gone out and it's not about me. Forget it. Skip over that. So what I like, I'm looking through the book. I'm seeing that you talk about a lot of the technical stuff about the, okay, here's how this works. Here's why this happens. Here's the optical. Here's what's physically happening. And here's how you achieve that. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I also read, that's the science part. Here's the art part. Now I see you, again, without going into great detail into it, I saw you start talking about composition and there is a technique to go with the technical.
Yeah, I mean, macro photography, all photography in general, let's say, is science. You need to understand the technical stuff. You need to understand what light is doing when it enters the lens, etc. All the buttons and features of your camera. You should learn that like the back of your hand. But you also have the art.
Why do you have to know that?
Because if you don't know it, you won't be able to switch your focus towards the art side of things. Because it has to almost be intuition. You have to have done it a handful of times or more so that it becomes less of a barrier to the artistic side of things. Because photography is a weave of both art and science. And on the art side, you have to understand the human perceptions of what is beauty. You have to understand lines and shapes and colors and how the human eye and mind reads an image and, you know, what colors are complementary and how you can guide the eye to the brightest point of the frame or the darkest, or how you can avoid that from happening based on understanding human perception. And the deeper you can weave both science and art together, the more magical the result will be. But you can't do that by just focusing on one or the other.
Correct. The way I like to think about the technical science part of it is I do like to know how that works, like the back of my hand, so that I can absolutely forget about it. I don't want to learn how to use. I don't want to figure out how a pencil is made and how a pencil works. I just want to draw.
But if you want to draw to the greatest ability, you have to understand exactly what the graphite might be in a number 2 versus a number 4 pencil, and understand your tools and do some research and make mistakes.
Which end to hold.
Experiment. Which end to hold. And then once you've done that, it becomes just muscle memory.
And on top of that, so you go through all these things, the basics and the technical technique, and then you even get into... I think you're a pioneer in a lot of this. Maybe I don't know other people doing meteorites, but you get into the kind of the experimental stuff that you're undertaking.
And sometimes I take a photo, some of the ultraviolet fluorescent stuff that I've done. I know that's been done before from a scientific perspective, and it's been studied and researched and everything else, but nobody really has approached it from the narrative art form that I have done in some cases, like even building in live actors and organic material and fluorescing minerals and stuff all within the same frame to construct these like fantasy fairy tale type images. And when I take a photo like that and I kind of take a step back and I realize I don't think anybody's done anything like this before. it's a good feeling. And then, you know, I research online and I find, yeah, nobody has combined these fluorescing minerals with these fluorescing flowers with an insect all in the same frame before. And you've done something new. Mm-hmm. And that's tricky because when I first started, you know, exploring photography, macro and otherwise, the pervasive mentality, I mean, it wasn't spoken to me directly because that'd be really talking down to somebody, but the ideas, the mood of other photographers were that, you know, there's nothing new under the sun, right? Everything's been done before. You can have your own perspective, but it's going to be so close to anybody else's. By the same nature of if you go to like Horseshoe Bend in the Grand Canyon, and you take a picture, no matter how unique you think your perspective is, it's the same as so many other people. Right. And there's no way around that. That's just what photography has become. You are just regurgitating what other people have done in a new format or echoing what other people have already said.
Even if it's by accident.
Even if it's by accident, right? You think you've done something spontaneously miraculous. No, other people have had that same realization. But the deeper I dove into macro photography, the more I realized that that's not true in this genre when you continue to go down that rabbit hole. When you continue to explore and experiment, the more mistakes you make, the more unique you will discover your ideas become.
And here's the one of the things I find that I really do find interesting without blowing smoke is that as you are going down these different rabbit holes and exploring and discovering, inventing new things, at least the ones that you're presenting anyways, are legitimately interesting. Sometimes we see people, you know, oh, they're doing, you know, new things for the sake of being new, and it's great, it's new, there's a reason we didn't do it before, but it's boring.
Well, and I've done some of that too. Like there's an effect that basically shows you ripples in the air based on the density of the air. Like you can see ripples around a match burning called the Schlieren effect. And that's a German word for you. And it, you know, traditionally required like a parabolic mirror and some other eccentricities. And I got some of that stuff and I did an initial test and I thought, huh, well, that's kind of neat. But how can I use that to make something pretty? And I didn't. And now it's still sitting in my closet here. I never figured out how to make that one beautiful. There was another
that could be
scenario.
The German part of it.
Maybe. I don't think anybody's figured out that one, though.
Right.
Another one was using a Krillian aura generator, which basically runs 30,000 volts through things and creates a corona discharge. And I electrocuted some flowers that way. And it turned out pretty cool. But it was also a one-trick pony. It's the kind of thing that you can do once, and then you've spent all of the effort to do it, and if you do it again, it's not going to be any better, and you can just move on to something else.
Like making a black and white photo, but the rose is still red?
Yeah. The only time when selective color of that has ever been accepted by me is Schindler's List.
That's why I brought it up. I was going to say a red jacket, but with the rose. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was a big deal then, and I admit I did it once or twice because I thought, oh, that's a really cool effect, and then moved on with my life. But so there are those things do happen, but you're definitely and again, this is all in the book. We have frozen soap bubbles in the book.
The only thing not in the book is selective color. I'm just not going there. But
you know
yes,
what? I'll write an addendum on there. I'll throw it on there.
No. but yes, freezing soap bubbles is a section that I've just been working on because I was remembering that I had done some ultraviolet fluorescing freezing soap bubbles and I had forgotten to add that in. So I'm doing another 2 or 4 pages on how you can make a bubble appear like it's glowing from within. You know, it's not a tricky or difficult thing to do. It's just you have to have the right conditions and, you know, put the right puzzle pieces together. And then once you've done it once, it's like riding a bike. It is that muscle memory effect where you're no longer concerned about the technical orientation of things. You're more concerned about, okay, I've blown a freezing soap bubble. I got it to be photographed, you know, freezing solid. It looks great. If I do it again, it's kind of the same thing again and again. So how do I switch it up? How do I make things different? How do I build a narrative into it? And that could be changing the surface that it's freezing on, changing the direction, changing the color that you're adding into the image. There's so many ways to improve a shot once you've gotten the technical basics down and the artistic elements take over.
And that's all in the book. So, Don, tell
people
who haven't ordered it yet, where can they go to pre-order?
You can pre-order at skycrystals.ca. That's the website where I used to have my Sky Crystals book, which is now out of print, and I'm piggybacking off of that website while I build a new one. So skycrystals.ca, yeah, it's available hardcover or an ebook, and the ebook of my first book is there too, if you're at all curious. Check it out, and if you have any interest in macro photography, I want this to be the best book out there. I'm not going to claim that it will be, but it's my goal to make it that way. And so I'm working hard towards that goal.
And Instagram, Facebook, where can people go to find the rest of you?
DonComPhoto, D-O-N-K-O-M Photo is where I would be on Instagram and Facebook. Twitter and Flickr is DonCom, D-O-N-K-O-M, and DonCom.ca is where you'll find links to all of those.
You know what's going to be fun is in the off chance that somebody listening has not heard of you, which is probably 0%, but if that is the case, we have new listeners, have not heard of you yet, they'll go and check out your sites and think, oh yeah, I've seen that guy's images everywhere.
Well, that's a compliment, thank you.
That's what I'm saying. I'm telling you, you'd be one of those guys who's kind of ubiquitous. Oh man, I should have picked an easier word to say than that. That people are going to go, oh yeah, he's that guy.
Well, yeah. I'm glad that my work has some characteristics that could be definitive of the photographer. That's actually a hard thing to accomplish because
it is.
Your name is not associated with your work. Unlike a musician or an actor where it's very easy to see who the character is, the photographer is kind of veiled behind artwork that kind of puts them into an anonymous framework. So I consider what you just said to be a great compliment. Thank you so much.
Well, that was an accident. I didn't mean to say that. I hate when that happens. All
well,
right,
you're not taking it back, so I'll just take it and run with it.
I'm just going to cut that part out and end at the early part. No, definitely go check out Don's work. And Don, once again, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And we're back.
Riveting.
Okay. He was.
Okay. I didn't listen to it, so.
Oh, he said a lot of negative stuff about you.
I hope so.
Yeah. It was a good 29 minutes of the 30 was all about you and how you've let him down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's
Tell Don next time. I don't know if this came up on your interview, but I'm still waiting for the photo from the Barry Colts that he took. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you remember the Barry Colts photo, that story that he took? And I really asked if you would send me the photo and not still waiting, Don. No photo yet.
I think there's been some legal action.
Okay. All right.
So we'll talk about that next episode. We'll have him. Okay. Actually, we're going to try to have him on as soon as we can on a real episode to get the interaction going. Cause it's been a while.
Right.
Since we've done that. So, challenge for next week is actually our monthly. That's the portrait. Of right. a non-family member, hashtag two hosers monthly challenge, hashtag hey hosers, and please tag us at two hosers on Instagram and we will check that out. Websites, Adam, where can people go to find your stuff?
I'll try to get it right this week, adamschwartz.ca.
Mm-hmm. Finally.
Yeah.
AlanAtridge.com is where you can find my stuff, or the two of us at twohosers.com where you can go to find all the links, photos, everything we just talked about. And that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.